This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In England, Ian McKellen is considered one of the most versatile and gifted actors of his generation. He's now starring in a new film adaptation of Richard III that takes the story out of Elizabethan times and moves it to London in the 1930s. This scene includes some of Shakespeare's most quoted lines.
Now is the winter of our discontent made glorious summer by this son of York. And all the clouds that lowered upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths.
Ian McKellen is an executive producer of the new film adaptation and co-wrote the screenplay. Most of his work has been on the British stage and classical theater. Perhaps he's best known in America for his role as Salieri in the original Broadway production of Amadeus, and for his roles in the film Scandal and The Band Played On and 6 Degrees of Separation. In 1988, at the age of 49, McKellen publicly came out. This was in part a reaction against a law passed earlier that year in England prohibiting the publication of materials that promote homosexuality. McKellen was knighted 3 years after coming out. I spoke with him in 1994 when he appeared on Broadway in his one-man show, A Night Out. That's night with a K. It's about acting and about being gay. I asked him if he was surprised to be knighted.
Yes, frankly, I was. I think I was the first openly gay person to receive an honour in Britain, and I took that as a slightly hopeful sign that maybe the world was beginning to grow up at last. I was happy to accept it as an actor because it put me, nominally at least, in the company of people I've admired all my life, like Sir Laurence Olivier and Sir John Gielgud and so on. But as an activist, which by that time I was, I knew in class-conscious Britain to be a knight was a very useful handle. And it meant that certain doors would open because I would have some social clout, and so it's proved. And
what doors do open when you're knighted?
Well, you'd be surprised, in my country at any rate, how impressed politicians are, even very senior politicians, by people who have a little fame and celebrity, and people who have a title, and it just means that government ministers, people right up at that level, are much more likely to answer a letter personally if it's on paper which is headed Sir Ian McKellen than one that just comes from that actor Johnny who I don't really know who he is. It just changed their attitude subtly and but crucially I've found.
What were your big fears about coming out, and did any of them come true?
I think what had always been a barrier to my coming out was the sense that no one would cast me, for example, as Romeo if they knew that in my private life it was Mercutio I fancied rather than Juliet. And that is, I know a lot of actors feel that if their audiences were to know that they were gay, somehow it would limit their possibilities of work. That really hasn't proved the case to me, but at 49, I was well established, and in fact, I've had more work than ever, particularly in films, playing, as I always have done, heterosexuals as well as homosexuals. So, if that was the fear, it was, in my case, an ungrounded one. But the real fear was nothing to do with my career at all. It was, as I've been saying, the great pressure that's put on gays and lesbians, whatever job they do, to keep quiet and shut up and go away and stay tight shut in the closet. And it takes a great deal of will to realize that you're taking on the world by coming out.
Do you think it affected your acting at all to have something very important and very personal that you had to hide from so many people?
It's difficult for me to assess, but critics and friends say that I am a better actor. One of the reasons I became an actor was feeling inhibited about expressing that part of myself, my sexuality, in public and private quite openly. I was able on stage to indulge my passions and be very open about them and draw attention to them. And that's why I think so many lesbians and gay people who are closeted privately are on stage extremely passionate. I suppose, therefore, it might have been that when I reached the stage in which I was open about this very important part of myself, there would be no need for me to be an actor anymore, personally. And I think, actually, that is true. I find as much satisfaction from my work as an activist and my getting close to the power structure in the United Kingdom to the extent of being able just to add my weight to changing those laws which discriminate against me and other people.
Hmm.
That to me is as rewarding as any performing I've done on a public stage. However, I mustn't stop acting, because it's only actually as a gay actor that I think I can be effective as a gay activist. I don't want to become a full-time politician. And actually, I'm so at ease with myself now, and that is the big advantage of coming out. There is nothing I'm frightened of anymore. That, of course, my acting has got to have improved, and because I'm prepared to go into every corner of my nature and my personality and apply it and put it at the service of whatever fictional character I'm playing.
I'd like to talk with you about your acting career. First of all, you really haven't done many movies. Most of your career has been on the stage, mostly the English stage, but some on Broadway as well, and Amadeus, for instance. Has it been a conscious choice to not do movies, or is that something you would have liked to do more of?
Thank you. That's a very kind and discreet way of putting it. I've spent my life trying to get into movies, and and here I am. The trouble is, with acting in the theatre, and it's about the only disadvantage, is that it does cut you off from a great many other things, including a stable family life, I must say. I mean, it's absolutely absorbing, and it's almost a 24-hour job. And long contracts and long runs make it very, very difficult to suddenly at the last minute nip off and do movies, which on the whole are cast at the last minute and you're not given much warning. And the only way to really try and have an established movie career, it seems to me, is to refuse to do the theatre for a spell. And rather late in the day, that's what I decided to do after I'd finished the United States tour of Richard III, when we landed up in Los Angeles. I said, right, that's it. And for the next 2 years, I thought I would leave myself open to film offers, and that's what I've done. And in the intervening 18 months, I've done, I think, 8 or 9 movies. But your audience may not realize that, because the parts I've played haven't been very considerable. I feel I've been very much a visitor to other people's films.
Mention some of the parts for us.
Well, I was in Last Action Hero. Did anybody see that? The first Schwarzenegger movie not to do too well at the box office, I think. I was in A Lovely Western, written by a woman and starring a woman called Ballad of Little Joe. 6 Degrees of Separation, the movie set in New York. I've just finished a little English film called Jack and Sarah. And there are others that don't immediately come to mind, and I'm sorry about that. But throughout this period, I've been learning about how to act in film. Of late in the theatre, I've been increasingly working in small theatres. I suppose that all began when I did Macbeth for the Royal Shakespeare Company in 1978 in a very small theatre indeed, perhaps 120 people scattered around a circular stage area. And since then, I've realised that that's really how I like to work. And film is an extension, of course, because that's a more intimate form of acting still.
So what are you having to learn doing more movies?
I'm not having to learn in the extent of unlearn bad habits. That's not the point. Acting in the theatre is a question of selecting what you want the audience to receive, because an audience sitting a long way away in the balcony will depend on very clear messages from the stage in gesture and in exaggerated body language and vocal technique. They need to have the character presented to them. I'm more interested in having that relationship where an audience selects for themselves from what is on offer, and that means they have to be very close. They have to be able to see the flicker of the eye. They have to be able to see the thought behind the face and the body, and that means that in front of the camera, I don't select, I just exist, I am, and that is a different technique of acting, though, of course, the process of preparing for it is very much like what you go through when you're rehearsing for a play.
We're featuring a 1994 interview with Sir Ian McKellen. He's currently starring in a screen adaptation of Richard III. He's also in the new film Restoration. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our interview with Sir Ian McKellen. I spoke with him in 1994 when he was preparing for a Broadway performance of his one-man show, A Night Out. For your performances this week in A Night Out, you're drawing from, it seems to me, everything that you know from your personal life and your acting career, and you're drawing both on personal experience and on plays that you've performed in and on other writings from people whose work you've performed. Might I convince you to do a short excerpt from the performance?
Yes, it's difficult to know what might be interesting to you, but here's a little section which will give you a taste of, although a lot of the show is hopefully amusing and ironic, this is at the heart of its seriousness, and I'm referring to at one point the trial of Oscar Wilde, and this is what was said by the judge summing up. Oscar Wilde, the crime of which you have been convicted is so bad that one has to put stern restraint upon oneself from describing, in language which I would rather not use, the sentiments which must rise to the breast of every man of honour who has heard the details of these two terrible trials. It is no use for me to address you. People who can do these things must be dead to all sense of shame. It is the worst case I have ever tried. I shall be expected to pass the severest sentence that the law allows. In my judgment, it is totally inadequate. The sentence of the court is that you be imprisoned and kept to hard labor for 2 years. And what he'd been convicted of course, was making love. And the gay poet A.E. Housman replied to that sentence and those sentiments on behalf of all persecuted gay people. The laws of God, the laws of man, he may keep that will and can, not I. Let God and man decree laws for themselves and not for me. And if my ways are not as theirs, let them mind their own affairs. Their deeds I judge and much condemn, yet when did I make laws for them? Please yourself, say I, and they need only look the other way. But no, they will not. They will still rest their neighbor to their will and make me dance as they desire with jail and gallows and hell fire. And how am I to face the odds of man's bedevilment and God's? I, a stranger and afraid, in a world I never made. They will be master, right or wrong, though both are foolish. Both are strong, and since my soul, we cannot fly to Saturn or to Mercury. Keep we must, if keep we can, these foreign laws of God and man.
Thank you very much for performing that for us. Did you ever think that something awful was going to happen to you if officials found out you were gay? Not exactly as awful as what happened, as the sentencing of Oscar Wilde, but that kind of like public humiliation and.
Yes, I think I must have done, and I think that was a real part of the repression of my life, which I deeply regret, and about which now that I'm beginning to understand it, I feel extremely angry about, and I think when I make public statements and when I try, along with many, many others, to get the laws which discriminate against my kind in the United Kingdom, I am fighting on behalf of myself as a young person, knowing that there are so many young people who are going through the same sort of feelings of repression that I was. However, the world is a better place than it used to be.
You grew up in small towns in England, and I believe your first exposure to the theater was traveling theater groups. What were they like?
I was a theatre goer long before I was an actor, and long before I intended to be a professional actor. And I was very lucky to see a wide variety of theatre. I saw John Gielgud on tour playing King Lear. I used to go down to Stratford-upon-Avon in the 1950s and see the great actors, Olivier, Charles Laughton, Paul Robeson, Edith Evans, Peggy Ashcroft in Shakespeare. I used to see variety theatre, vaudeville, which was still just standing up in England in the 40s and 50s, and at very close quarters, sometimes backstage. I used to visit these artists of various sorts, whether they were animal acts, conjurers, comedians, singers, and that world of stand-up comic has, I think, affected my interest in doing my own solo show, and some of it is deliberately uses the techniques of those people who perhaps I admire more than any other sort of performer, who can bravely stand on an open stage and entertain 1,000 or 2,000 people for a couple of hours. Or I think people who do that regularly for a living, and for whom most of their material is designed to make an audience laugh, must be the most exposing experience a performer can have. And those who bring it off, I think, have my admiration more than any others.
So you had the courage when you were young to go backstage and meet the people who were performing?
Well, I was very lucky. My father knew a man who owned a theatre, and that's how it happened. And so I, at a very early age, I was intrigued with the glamour of that secret which performers have, that they know what goes on backstage and they create what goes on stage. And when they step out of the darkness into the light, something magical happens, you know, that the henpecked husband suddenly becomes the man of total confidence. The slightly dowdy person dressed up in sequins and a bit of makeup on their face suddenly on stage becomes the most glamorous person in the world. And I wonder now, looking back, whether that didn't appeal to me because I was in a dark world of being gay, and yet on stage I was able to step out into the light on my own terms and attract the audience's attention and approval.
When you came to the classical theatre from small towns in England, were there things you had to change about yourself for the theatre? Things in either your carriage or your diction?
Yes, it's to me a fascinating study that perhaps one day I should try and formalize into a book or something. But theatre acting, any acting, is about disguise, and at the same time, it is about absolute honesty. The characters one plays are not oneself. But they have within them aspects of oneself. And you're only ever going to be convincing as, let's say, Macbeth, if you examine that part of your nature which is so ambitious that you would be prepared to commit murder for your own self-advancement. You have to be able to imagine what that would be like and therefore look deep, deep into yourself. Now, that is being extremely honest, in a way that most people are not required to be honest in their work. And at the same time, you are disguising because you are not Macbeth, nor do you speak in blank verse, which he does. The tension and between disguise and absolute honesty is a very telling one indeed, and I think goes to the heart of what it is to be human as opposed to what it is to be a non-human animal, because all the other animals in the world are extremely honest. They are always themselves, except when they're being occasionally devious and changing the colour of their skin to fit in with their surroundings. But their nature is very, very difficult to change, essentially, animals cannot be changed, but human beings change and disguise themselves the whole time, and that's part of what it is to be a human being. In the morning, we dress up in a costume appropriate to whatever activity we're going to do. And when I was a young man, I thought, as an actor, it would be limiting to be vocally, for instance, identifiable as someone from the north of England, and so I got rid of my northern accent to a great extent and spoke received pronunciation English. And I rather regret I did that, because I think probably on the whole there was no need to do it. An actor should have two sort of accents, perhaps, their own, their native one, and then something of a more general nature which they can use where it's applicable. But when I started out acting, I thought all actors should only speak with a bland, received pronunciation.
Sir Ian McKellen, recorded in 1994. He's now starring in the new film adaptation of Richard III. It's currently showing in New York and Los Angeles, and opens in more cities later this month. This is Fresh Air.